Hi, folks. Just a quick note about the audio quality. It is going to sound a little bit echoey. The InstaMic, I thought I had pinned to my chest. Well, I did have pinned to my chest, but I thought I had turned on and working. It does not appear to have saved the audio properly. I don't know what's going on. There's lots of space used on the memory of the thing, so it should be there. And frankly, this is also my third go just trying to record this bit to apologize about the recording of the other bit. I'm out of time. I've got to get on an airplane, so I'm going to push it with the audio recorded straight off the phone. Sorry about the quality. I will try and get on top of this for next time.
Okay, everyone. Last weekly update for US trip. I am in Seattle at the moment. I'm at the very end of this trip. I am finally drinking celebratory beer, which incidentally is all pretty much the same as all the other beer I drank during the week, which is part of the challenge of one of these trips. I'm trying to pace yourself out a little bit. I've mostly done it okay, but in fairness, I did get to this afternoon. I wrapped up all my stuff probably about 2 o'clock today, and then I literally went to bed and fell asleep for 2.5 hours, which is great before I completely screw up all my cycles with jet lag tomorrow when I go home. So, recapping briefly on where I've been last weekend. And I've still got this cough I cannot shake. Last weekend, I was in New York when I did this update. So I'd done the Pluralsight event there. I did a law enforcement event on Monday, which was super cool. It's not something I can really go into too much detail on, but very, very interesting to chat to a bunch of people in positions where they're trying to keep the rest of us safe. So really interesting bunch of people. Very, very interesting as well to hear how far Have I Been Pwned is being used in places like I never, ever expected. Very often for things like education purposes. This is one of the interesting things I'm hearing from folks in all walks of life. You can probably guess some of them by the nature of the event that I was at. But using it for things like as part of our education for our workforce, get them to do things like check their accounts on Have I Been Pwned. Because when people do that, and they say that they've been in data breaches, they have this light bulb moment where they go, this is a thing. Maybe I need to be a little bit careful with my passwords and the information I enter into websites and this sort of thing. So just absolutely fascinating to meet people and hear that. So that was cool. I did that on Monday. Monday was a hell of a day, actually. So I did this event. I flew from New York to Seattle, where I am now. 6.5 hour flight from one end to the other, which is even further than going like Brisbane to Perth in Australia. Now, the thing, that didn't surprise me too much. I think it surprises other people more that it can actually take about 6 hours in a flight from Brisbane to Perth. Australia, very big place. So I did that, and I got to Seattle like the equivalent of 3 a.m. New York time. We'll just mute the iPad there. So that was just an absolutely crazy kind of schedule to then get here at that hour and up first in the morning for MVP stuff. Now, I've done, I think, one of these from MVP Summit before. So I was at the summit last year. I don't think I was the year before. And I've been doing these videos for about 2 years. But basically, the premise of this summit, in fact, the premise of the MVP program, for those that aren't aware, is it's for people that make community contributions around Microsoft technologies. So, for example, for me, originally my MVP award in 2011 was because I was writing a lot about security in ASP.NET. And then I got the award and I went and did community talks and things like this. There are MVPs for all sorts of other Microsoft technologies. So you end up with, I think, several thousand different MVPs around the world. Once a year, Microsoft has this event. You all come to Seattle. It's a 3-day event. I missed Monday because of the New York stuff, but Tuesday, Wednesday. And you spend a lot of time over the Microsoft campus with these product group sessions where you will go to a session where a product group might explain the roadmap of their particular technology. So look, this is what we think we're going to deliver in the future. This is some of the rationale behind it. What do you guys think? And you get to have some very candid interactions. And let me tell you, they are really, really candid. I was in a couple of sessions this week where people really sort of laid out exactly what they thought of some decisions, exactly what they were hearing from a lot of their customers. So there's a lot of people here that work for, say, software development shops. So, hey, this is what our customers think of this technology. And they fed that back to Microsoft. And everyone, without exception in my experience, is always really receptive to that. So it's a great kind of feedback cycle of different things. So Microsoft takes that very, very seriously. It is a massive event. Like, you're walking around Seattle, certainly the suburb of Seattle, and on every single street corner, there's people with, like, Microsoft MVP badges and things. So anyway, that was really good. I went to one session in particular, and also a lot of all this stuff is under NDA, so there's a lot we can't talk about yet. One session in particular about a roadmap, which I'm super, super excited about, related to security, which then led to me having some really good one-on-one or one-on-team discussions in Microsoft too, giving some feedback on things and learning a bit more about what they're doing. And there's going to be some really, really cool stuff to talk about in a few months on that front. So I actually end up having a lot of these one-on-one discussions with people, everything related to obviously some of the security stuff you can probably imagine around things like Azure. Also, some of the stuff around the way things like passwords are working. So many people have asked me before around things like Microsoft's list of banned passwords, which you can configure in an Office 365 tenant. So I spent some time today talking to the person responsible for that. Spent some time judging a hackathon a couple of days ago about people using Microsoft Graph API. So lots of time with people actually in the organization who otherwise I'd only email with, but once a year I get this opportunity to get face-to-face. So that was Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and for the first half of today was our Regional Director Summit. So for those of you not familiar with the program, Regional Director doesn't mean you work for Microsoft. You don't get a region, you don't direct anything, you don't get any money. With me so far? Good. So the RD role is not aligned to one technology stack. It's a broader, cross sort of cutting role. It's usually for people that have roles where they get to interact with high levels of companies or governments or things like this, where they're more community influencers than what I might have been with just one niche technology as an MVP. And we get more access to more people and a little bit more insight into sort of the strategy of the organization. So some very, very interesting people there. So we spent a couple of days doing that. Wrapped it all up today and, yeah, then went to sleep because I was so tired. So I'm going out to dinner in a little bit and then I will be on the plane tomorrow afternoon. I think I'm going to go-karting tomorrow morning just because I want to go and have fun. this is starting to become my measure, more fun. So that has been so far. Now, just while I think of it as well, next week I'm going to get home at like stupid o'clock Monday morning. Wednesday, I'm going back to Sydney. I'm going to be doing a keynote at Akamai. I think they called it the Akamai Cloud Summit. So if you're around Sydney on Thursday, I will be doing the Akamai keynote. Thursday night, I will do the MVP, the NDC meetup. Now, this is the meetup that I've done in Brisbane. Sold that out. Did in Sydney. I'll be in Sydney. Did in Melbourne. Sold that out. You can tell I don't edit any of this. Sold out both of those. Now, again, like selling out, they're free tickets. We got rid of all the tickets. We absolutely hit capacity, standing room only. So if you're going to be around Sydney on Thursday night, this is a lot of fun. Someone asked me on Twitter, they said, is this the same as the talk I did at Ignite in Sydney last month? It's very similar. The big difference is that we probably spend more time on Q&A than what we do actually on content. And there was something that happened to have I been pwned traffic-wise and Azure-wise after Ignite that I've now incorporated into the talk, which I think is really interesting. It's basically like the Ignite talk was, here's how I fixed everything on have I been pwned and made it super, super scalable with functions and things. The extra bit now is, here's how it broke the other day when I had this crazy volume of traffic from Italy on. So I'll be there. That will probably also mean another late update because on Friday I've got another event on too. But I'll be doing a weekly update all the same. Just might be a little bit late like these other ones have been. All right, that's travel stuff. Now, I've just got a bunch of, I don't want to say random things, but a bunch of things on my list to talk about, which have happened during the week, which I think are relevant. Either things that I've been involved in or some industry things, which I think are really worthwhile having a bit of chat about. Start with the ones I've been involved in, data breaches. Now, one of the nice things about this summit is I've had a lot of time sitting there in sessions, listening to things and still able to work on my laptop and get stuff done. I have almost cleared my inbox, which is an absolute freaking miracle. I have also processed 4 different data breaches, and I thought I'd touch on these quickly. So 4 different breaches gone into have I been pwned. Right, first one, Ixigo. Ixigo is an Indian company. Now, you know what? I always get confused about what these guys actually do. And there's an interesting sort of side note on this as well. Well, you know what? Let's just go to the website. Ixigo. The side note comes from the fact that what's happened is we had a whole bunch of data breaches announced by the register after they saw data being traded online. So Ixigo, no, this was right, travel. Best flight, train and hotel deals. So the register did a piece in Feb about all sorts of different organisations that have had their data leaked all over the place. So I spoke about Houzz, I think it might actually be Houzz, because there's two Zs. Spoke about them last weekend. MyFitnessPal, MyHeritage, a bunch of others. One of them was a company called Ixigo, Indian-based travel company. And when I was looking for the actual data breach, in terms of looking for news of the data breach, someone sent me the data, I was looking for the news. The only news I could find on it, like they didn't have a disclosure statement or anything anywhere, was a press piece which said they'd spoken to Ixigo and Ixigo had said something along the lines of, we haven't been able to find any evidence of the breach. And I suspect that what's actually happened here is they have heard this story or seen this story. They've then gone to their systems and somehow tried to see if they could identify a breach, hadn't been able to find any evidence of it, and then they've gone, no breach. Also, we're resetting your passwords anyway, which kind of seemed a little bit contradictory to me. So when I was processing this data, I did my own sort of first round verification of the data. Yep, checks out using all the means that I've spoken about many times before. Couldn't find a disclosure statement from them, so I tweeted the first row, actually part of the first row of the data breach, obfuscated out anything personally sensitive, left the person's name, left a link to their Facebook post because it was the CEO's record. Now, when the first row of a data breach is the actual CEO, you sort of start to go, yeah, I could see how that would happen, you're a founder of the company. Anyway, they got in touch, and there was a bit of an interesting to and fro, and I won't disclose too much because it was a private discussion. But basically, yeah, like they couldn't identify the source of the incident. They clearly had not seen the data itself. So obviously I said, well, look, let me send it to you. It is allegedly from your system. I believe it's from your system. I will send it to you. I never send it to anyone else that asks for it. But, you know, you should have a look at this. And they inevitably have been able to verify it. I did prod and say, look, this is the sort of thing you actually want to disclose properly now. Because originally you sort of said, no evidence of it, abundance of caution, reset passwords, etc. Now you have seen it. It'd be really nice for you to actually own up to it. And I did link through to a bunch of resources about how to do breach disclosure. So, for example, there's a blog post I wrote called Breach Disclosure 101, How to Succeed After You've Failed. And it looks at a bunch of different disclosures from different companies, which ones have been good, which ones have been bad. There's those. 8Fit. 8Fit had 15 million email addresses in that. 58% of those were already in Have I Been Pwned. Incidentally, 23% of the Ixigo accounts were in Have I Been Pwned. 23% is a very, very low ratio. And I suspect it's related to a predominantly Indian audience, which perhaps didn't have as much representation in the predominantly US-based data breaches that are already in there. That's my best guess. So 23% on Ixigo, 58% on 8Fit. Hortlook had 28 million unique email addresses in it. 82% of those already in Have I Been Pwned. Now, I had a number of people, Hortlook, by the way, is a fashion website, a number of people contact me and say, how am I in a data breach that I never signed up to the website for? And then there's a couple of answers to this. One answer is I do actually have a blog post literally titled that, why I'm in a data breach for a website I never signed up to. The other is, as I said, I'm pretty sure I said this last weekend, I loaded the Houzz data breach and I got a notification from Have I Been Pwned saying I was in the breach. I had no recollection of signing up to that site, but I looked at the data. It was definitely me. It was an IP address from London, and I was in London at the time. Like, it was me. I had forgotten about it. The other thing is, several people have said it's their Nordstrom's email address. And I haven't actually looked at this, but I believe that Nordstrom, I guess there's a shopping chain here, owns the Hortlook website. So maybe they were thinking Nordstrom's, but I don't know. There's always a way. And you know what? If you're unsure and you got a notification from Have I Been Pwned, go to the company and say, my data was in this data breach. Can you please explain why? You know, put the onus back on them. They are the ones who lost the data, let's face it. There's another topic there I must write about. Like, I'm really sort of, and I'm really going to try not to say the G acronym from Europe as well as we go down this path, but I'm very, very much of the mind that if any company, no matter where they are in the world, if they lose your data or if they expose your data, let's face it, they haven't lost it. There's a lot of backups of it now. But if they expose your data, they should be absolutely responsible for things like explaining to you why they had your data in the first place. So there's that one. Another one I loaded just today, Bookmate. So Bookmate for reading books on your mobile device. It's a little one, only about 4 million. 63% of those are already in Have I Been Pwned. Salted SHA-512 hashes as well, by the way, which I don't think there was any key stretching on those, which would basically make those pretty useless in terms of cryptographic protection. Incidentally, Hortlook had bcrypt, and 8Fit had bcrypt as well. I think Hortlook had like a work factor of 8, and 8Fit had 10 or something like that. So, you know, like, good on those guys for having a good hashing algorithm for the passwords, because that's going to give a lot of protection to the accounts that were actually in there. Now, that's those ones. I do still have an endless, it feels like near endless, supply of other breaches that I'm still dealing with. Moving on, I want to touch on something else. And there's a story about this that's now out around a company called Exactus. Now, I don't think I spoke about this last weekend because, if I recall correctly, I was speaking to Andy Greenberg from Wired when I was sitting around in LA trying to get to Denver, which I spoke about last weekend. And if you recall, Exactus is a data breach aggregation service. No, that's what Have I Been Pwned is. A data aggregation service. And what this means is that they collect a huge amount of data on people like you and I, and then they sell it to other companies. Now, they had themselves a data breach, and it was several hundred million records exposed last year. Vinny Troyer, a security researcher who's very well known for finding this sort of stuff, found it. They did all the cleanup and everything in terms of getting it shut down, sent the data to Have I Been Pwned. I notified my customers. A lot of people got very upset with Exactus, and rightly so. So this is a company that siphoned up a huge amount of data from different places, and then without the... I'm going to choose my words carefully here. Without, I guess, the informed consent of individuals, and again, I'm not going to say the G word, we're just going to talk about people being decent humans on the internet for a bit, without being forced into it by regulation. So without sort of informed consent, they collected all of this data and then they sold it to other companies. Now, just to qualify what I mean by this informed consent, and again, we're not going to talk about four-letter acronyms in Europe. We're going to talk about what is the decent thing to do. If I go to a website... and it's like there's a survey, and the survey says you could win a Caribbean cruise, just enter your details here, tick this box to agree to the terms, and there's 5,000 words worth of terms, and some of those words say your data now may be taken and sold to other places. I don't particularly feel that I'm very well informed insofar as I really am not going to know what happens to that data later on. I'm not going to read the 5,000 words. Everyone freaking knows it. Stop doing that shit and behave like nice humans on the internet. So... the point is that a lot of people left their data in places where inevitably the terms then gave this organization the right to monetize their information. Now, Exactus was one of these companies. There are many of them. There are many of them in Have I Been Pwned, let alone many of them on the internet. What was really interesting about this story, I want to sort of just read the headline, and then I want to talk about one snippet I tweeted. So the headline is, here's what it's like to accidentally expose the data of 230 million people. Now, when I spoke to Andy, Andy had actually covered this story back in whenever it was, middle of last year. And it seems like the guy who was responsible for this service feels a bit hard done by. Now, when I was sitting there, I remember where I was. I was sitting there in the sunshine in LA having a coffee waiting for my flight, which never went that day. But anyway, speaking to Andy, and Andy's sort of saying, look, this guy says there's a lot of companies on the web that do this. A lot of this information is in the public domain anyway. They're running a legitimate service. And he was giving me all these reasons why the CEO of this company felt it was reasonable to do this. And this guy's last name is Hardigree. I can't remember his first name. It's in the story. Anyway, I'm listening to this and I'm just like, my head's just going, these are all just excuses. And when Andy stopped talking, I was like, I was playing the world's smallest violin when he said all that. Honestly, like, this is absolute bullshit. I want to read this quote here. There's this one paragraph here, and this is what I put in the tweet earlier in the week. Hardigree also still maintains that the data Exactus aggregated and then exposed wasn't actually sensitive and that the outrage over its exposure was overblown. He says much of it was pulled from sources like public records and census data. Exact has combined that public information with data it traded for and bought with sources ranging from payday loan and auto companies to surveys to registration forms for building publications. Hardiree claims that hundreds of small companies possess similar data. Not going to argue with him on that point. He argues that anyone can buy a less refined version of the same collection, what's known as a consumer master file, for around $1,000. The data is out there, and it has always been out there, Hardiree says. Now, I did have my small violin going in my mind again as I read that. And a lot of the reason is that regardless of how important he thinks the data is or how sensitive he thinks the data is, it's not his fucking data. You know, and this is what absolutely drives me nuts. It's not his information. It is the information of other people. And I appreciate there is a sort of a geo thing here where the US tends to be much more around the company owns the data, and parts of the world like Europe tend to be much more around the people own the data. I am very much of the European mindset insofar as it is your data. Like, you should have control of this. The fact that you're monetized in this way is not cool. And it really shouldn't be up to some bloke sitting on your data to decide whether or not he thinks it's okay to sell it to whoever's going to pay money for it. Like, this should be the decision of the people that own the data. I keep putting all this stuff into a draft blog post I have about data aggregators as well. I'm getting a lot of material in there, and I want to just try and absolutely nail that coffin shut at some point with a really good blog post on it. So, you know, this whole sort of premise about pulling from public records, we have seen so many data breaches in the past where this has happened and then the company has been raked over the coals, at least on the Twitters. So, for example, GeekedIn. So there was a service called GeekedIn which scraped GitHub, scraped people's data, including my data, from there, and then tried to make sort of a recruitment service. Now, not only does this break GitHub's terms and conditions, but people don't expect their data to be used in that way. Just because my email address and my name and the, let's say, the different questions and answers and things of contributed, well, actually, that would be Stack Overflow, but the different projects or check-in rates or technologies I use that might be public on GitHub, just because it's there and it's publicly accessible doesn't mean I'm happy with someone else picking it all up, combining it into some other data set and selling it. Like, this stuff is just not cool. So, not a lot of sympathy for this bloke over that. I think there's a bunch of legal stuff going on. Apparently, he actually got some threats as well, some pretty nasty threats. And look, that's not cool. Like, we don't agree with what the guy did, but it sounds like his family was threatened or he had death threats or something like that. And that's not cool in any way, shape or form. Also not cool to take our data and do that with it. All right, so that was Exactus. Now, something else. In fact, someone else asked me to kind of touch on this, and I put it in my list of things I was going to talk about, and then the Facebook thing happened, and we're going to talk about the Facebook thing. But there's an article here around education and science giant Elsevier left users' passwords exposed online. Due to a misconfigured server, a researcher found a constant stream of Elsevier's users' passwords. And what appears to have happened here is, as people have sort of authenticated to this service, possibly just the logs have gone, okay, grab the whole HTTP request, dump the passwords to a log file somewhere. Someone's found that's been left exposed and they've grabbed that data. Now, inevitably, that's not good. In fact, I'm just looking at one of the statements here. It's not clear entirely how long the server was exposed or how many accounts were impacted, but it provided a rolling list of passwords as well as password reset links when a user requested to change their logging credentials. So this sounds totally like logs have just been overly aggressively collected and then left exposed. Two bad things. If only the first thing happened, not so bad. But when it's exposed as well, much worse. Now, actually, let's do this. Let's actually talk about the next thing on Facebook, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Elsevier one as well. So, Facebook. They had themselves a little issue. I've got so many press requests over this because it has absolutely blown up. So that the press this week, and you know what, we'll just grab the Krebs piece, just, and my iPad just crashed. All right, so while my iPad is rebooting, so there's a Krebs piece about Facebook having logged somewhere potentially between, I think they said 200 and 600 million passwords in plain text, logged the passwords in plain text. So I wanted to sort of touch on this this story here and then sort of pull it apart a little bit as well, because there's been a little bit too much mind losing for my likes. Headline from Krebs's piece here is, Facebook stored hundreds of millions of user passwords in plain text. Now, This is not unusual insofar as both GitHub and Twitter last year disclosed the same thing. They said, look, this is the best as I can make of it. We basically have some sort of a logging framework. The logging framework is logging events. Now, keep in mind, like the number 10 in the iOS top 10 now is insufficient logging and auditing. Like the whole thing is you should be logging important security events such as an authentication event. So the premise I'm happy with. But what seems to have happened is that these people have employed logging frameworks, which let's say hypothetically have just said, hey, let's just save the whole HTTP request. And of course, when you log in your HTTP request is the username and the password in the clear. So Facebook seems to have been logging this, seems to have actually been going back some years. I thought it was about 2 years, but I noticed the opening para of Krebs's piece says in some cases going back to 2012. and obviously, like, this is terrible. Nobody wants this to happen. We go to so much effort to store passwords securely, and Facebook really, really stores, I mean, other than this incident, really, really stores them securely. Jeremiah Gosney, who's a very famous guy in terms of hashcracking and so on, tweeted about how they do their password storage, and he was like, this is freaking amazing. They do a great job of it. So they put a huge amount of effort into that, and then unfortunately, due to misconfiguration or overly aggressive logging, this has happened. I'm not quite sure how an organization the size of Facebook, A, has that happen. All right, I can kind of picture how that happens. But B, more importantly, allows that to go on for so long without it being noticed. I think that's probably the more interesting question out of all this. But let's kind of tackle a few things in both these cases about what it means, what is a problem, what's not a problem. So I mentioned before, really you've got to have two things happen. You've got to be logging the stuff in the clear, and then someone else has got to obtain it. Now, it looks like in the Elsevier incident, both of these things have happened. Definitely been logged. It's been exposed. Other unauthorized parties have gained access to it. The Facebook one, for all their faults about logging it in the first place, there doesn't appear to be any evidence of anyone else having obtained those passwords. And then when you think about it, like, other stuff does really have to go wrong. If you are dumping it all in log files somewhere, someone's got to get your log files. You know, and they're like, how are they going to do that? Well, there's going to have to be a security misconfiguration somewhere, a flaw that exposes them, a rogue admin. Something else is going to have to go really, really badly wrong. And without that thing going really, really badly wrong, this does become a bit of a non-event. Now, that's not to say it's not significant. Like, logging passwords in the clear is a significant thing. But in terms of the impact on people, there is only impact if another party gets that data. There is some criticism here around Facebook taking a while to disclose it. So it sounds like they found it in Jan and it's just come to light, obviously, just the last few days. I haven't read all the commentary on it, but it sounds like maybe this is something that was disclosed a little bit quietly to Krebs, and there was an insider who went, hey, you know, just so you know, this has been happening. And I do wonder if Facebook just kind of got to the point where, okay, we found this, we didn't see any evidence of abuse, we didn't really feel there was a necessity to either notify customers or reset passwords. Let's just sort of keep a lid on it because there's no impact. Someone else sort of went, okay, I'm going to chuck you under the bus for it, disclose it to Krebs, and now they're like, okay, well, now it's in the press, we have to disclose. I think, if anything, the lesson from this is that if you do discover something like that, you do really, really need to disclose it, because as we've seen with Twitter and GitHub last year as well, it does become a massive story. And you kind of want to be on the front foot and own it rather than it leaking to a journalist and then the narrative of it being misrepresented. And I do feel it's happened a lot. I've seen some stories which are all around how much the sky is falling because of this. Some interesting commentary from the Twitters, as there always is on the Twitters. So two things that stuck out at me and I made notes on. One was people saying Facebook should be properly hashing the passwords. They should never have them in the clear. When you go to a website and it loads a login page and you enter the username and the password and you click submit, there is an HTTP, hopefully HTTPS, certainly is with Facebook, request that sends those credentials encrypted from the client through to the server. The server receives it, decrypts it. It then has access to the clear text password. This happens when you register, when you log in, when you change your password. This is just the way HTTP requests work. Now, of course, what we should be doing there in the application is then properly hashing it before it's stored anywhere. Plus, we should never be storing it in the logs, but we know that by now. So the point is that There is no hand-wringing or jumping up and down or sky-falling stuff to be made about the fact that Facebook had access to them in the clear. That's how it works. I saw someone saying, well, you really should be hashing all of that on the client. Well, not so much, because you do have TLS end-to-end, so you do protect the entire transport layer. There are other issues with doing that on the client. It is a very rare thing to see. And the other thing is that if you want to go down the route of saying, I don't trust the company to look after my passwords properly, are you sure you're going to trust them to do it on the client properly? And then if someone else gets their script on the client anyway, well, you're kind of screwed anyway. If it's like a Magecart style, I'm going to get script on the page. Well, you know, they're still going to have access to the DOM and anything you enter into a field. We're going to sort of go down a rabbit hole here. The point is that them having access to a clear text password at login is not the issue. The issue is storing it in the log files. Then there was the whole delete Facebook thing. Ah, delete Facebook always comes up. Look, there's like 2.2 billion people using Facebook. So this movement is not really gaining a lot of traction. I had people saying to me, look, when are you going to delete Facebook? It's like, but I don't want to delete Facebook. I like seeing my friends and seeing the fun that they have doing their things with their families and around the world and whatever else. I like using it to promote what I do and to, you know, share videos like this. I'm not going to delete Facebook. I'm just going to be a bit smart about how I use it. So I don't like this binary position of it's almost like you're on Facebook and the world is going to end and all your stuff is public, or delete the whole thing and don't have anything at all. Maybe just be a bit smart and a bit selective about how you use it. That seems to be the common sense approach. Okay, one more. This one just hit the news today and I was wondering when it would come out. And this is related to something that Lorenzo from Motherboard contacted me on. I was still in Australia. It must have been, I think, about 3 weeks ago. And Lorenzo pinged me and he said, have a look at this. And basically what it was a web server publicly facing, a path with directory listing enabled, and a very, very large number of images and media files. And all of these were images and media files taken from people's phones due to a spyware company. Let that sink in for a moment while I take a sip. Now, this is a company that sells products commercially that you go and buy and you install them, for argument's sake, on your children's phones, because you want to make sure that what they're doing on their phones is not going to get them into trouble or have any other problem. Now they kind of are in trouble because of this, but we'll get back to that. But, you know, you want to see the messages that they're sending their friends and the photos they're taking and the voice messages and things like this. Now, this was pretty nasty insofar as there was a very, very large amount of data there. And one of the challenges from my side as well is that when we see stuff like this, where it's exposed on a web server, it is still on their server. And, you know, yes, they should not have actually left it publicly facing without a password or anything like that, or directory listing enabled. They shouldn't have done any of that, but that's where it is. How do I then do any sort of verification? And I want to make one sort of thing clear, because I'm not sure it entirely came across in the story, though Lorenzo is certainly aware of it, is when I looked at this, and there's a quote in here about me calculating the size of it. In fact, if we look for my name, where was it? Troy. There we go. Troy Hunt, a researcher who maintains a rich database, Have I Been Pwned, analyzed the database and said that there were around 16 gigabytes of images and around 3.7 gigabytes of MP3 recordings in it. Motherboard confirmed his analysis. It's hard to say how many unique pictures and recordings there are. However, some pictures appear they have been uploaded multiple times. The way I come up with those numbers is not by downloading the data. It's a directory listing. It literally has the size of each file next to it. So I literally just copied and pasted the directory listing, dumped it in Excel, added up the columns, and that's what we got to. So it's not like I needed to download 3.7 or 16 gigabytes worth of data in order to figure that out. It was actually easier just to look at the directory listing. Anyway, the whole story about this is that the whole heart of the story, Lorenzo literally can't get a response from the company. Weeks on, he cannot get a response from the company to say, yeah, maybe we'll sort of lock this down and not have all of these customers' data floating all over the place. He couldn't get a response from GoDaddy, by the sound of it, as well, the hosting provider. Why would he choose GoDaddy? Anyway. And the thing is also, and this is another blog post I got in draft two around spyware products, this keeps happening over and over again. In fact, he's got a piece in his story here. In the last 2 years, there have been 12 stalkerware companies. Incidentally, these guys don't like it when you call them stalkerware. Ask me how I know, because I've had one of them contact me before. stalkerware companies, stuff it, we're going to say it anyway, that have either been breached or left data exposed online. Retina X twice, FlexiSpy, Mobi Stealth, Spymaster Pro, Spy Human, Spy Phone, The Truth Spy, Family Orbit, M-Spy, Copy 9, and X-Nova. Never, ever, ever install this stuff on anyone's phone. Certainly not your kids. And the context of the blog post I've got is that some people then lose their minds when I say this because they're like, well, yes, but I want to keep my children safe. Do you think this is safe when all their pictures and things are on the internet for anyone to download? Like, this is crazy. You know, how about talk to your kids and be a responsible parent? Like, start there. Also, there are a whole bunch of parental controls for everything from iOS to Windows to whatever your product of choice is. There are lots of ways of doing parental controls. That doesn't necessarily mean you get to spy on their messaging, but as soon as there's a product that lets you spy on their messaging, inevitably it ends up letting other people spy on their messaging too. So I just sort of lament the continued appearance of this class of service in data breaches, and also the continuation of parents thinking that this is a good idea. Now, look, I get it. There's a lot of non-technical parents out there that wouldn't understand the likelihood of this happening or the risks related to it as well. So I understand that that is hard for non-tech people. But for the tech people that listen to me, honestly, if you ever see anyone even thinking about installing one of these products, for God's sake, don't let them do it. This is also the class of product that is very often installed by jealous partners spying on their wife or their husband, for example. It's not dissimilar to the sorts of products a lot of organizations use to monitor employees. But like, again, there are better ways of doing all of this. You know, talking to your partner is one of them. If you're an organization, there are products meant for managing a mobile device workforce. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there to do this professionally instead of installing dodgy crap on people's phones and then having it exposed all over the internet. All right, I'll finish that rant, but it's so annoying. And we will be having exactly the same discussion 3 weeks from now, something like that, when the next one appears in a data breach. All right, last thing, Twilio is sponsoring my blog this week. They are talking about Authy. So if you remember, Twilio owns Authy. Authy is a fantastic way of doing 2FA on your application. Certainly, I use their Authy client a lot to store my one-time passwords, which do the little generator thing. I think I mentioned it before. In fact, I can show you on the watch here, but I literally have the Authy app here so that, I know it shouldn't matter anyway, but I'll pick something that's not like super sensitive. If I go and have a look at, here we go, Spark Post. So I've got the app literally on the phone or literally on the watch, and I know it just popped off as well. Bam, there we go, quickly see it. So it's actually really cool in terms of using that app. When I do 2FA these days, I tend to go, okay, username, password, out of 1Password. I separate my 2FA tokens into Authy, and then I find it's actually easier to pull them up from the watch than to pull them up from the phone or something like that. And I appreciate that's just the client app. Twilio is talking about how to use Authy as developers to actually add 2FA to your apps. If you're doing logins, you should have 2FA. So make sure you go and check that out. And a big thanks to those guys for their sponsorship this week. So that's me done. I now get to go and have some dinner, which will be the last dinner here I have in Seattle, off to Australia tomorrow. And I'll probably do this from home, probably next weekend. So it's going to be a little bit late, but I will be back in the country. And I'll be in the country through all of April, which is actually really good news. So thank you for watching. And again, for the folks in Sydney, come see me Thursday night. I'd love to have a massive turnout there. Let's book the place out. Thank you very much. See ya.